This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. There's all kinds of news we could talk about, and we're going to talk about, like NBC being mad about Ronna McDaniel getting hired, and people are moving, and the spending thing, and all kinds of stuff, the comments from Mexico's president. So, of course, we're not doing any of that. I mean, I'm going to get to it. Don't get me wrong. That's coming. But look, you know what time it is. It's Monday. It's the start of the second hour on Monday, so it's Medal of Honor Monday time. And I warned you last week that this was going to be a double whammy, a two-banger. I've been doing a bunch of different reading. I've written like 3 different books right now on Peleliu. Well, that's not really true. I read one, then I read another one. Now I'm on my third one on Peleliu, one of the Pacific War battles. And there's just some backstory, a little expanded stuff on a couple of medals of honor that were won on Peleliu that I wanted to talk about. Someone had a question about Vietnam I thought was fascinating. Essentially, we're going to do some battlefield war history, Medal of Honor, honoring some heroes stuff. So buckle up and enjoy the ride. It's Medal of Honor Monday / History Hour, and it might go on for a while. Now, I'm going to set both of these stories up, and this may take just a few. So here's kind of how it works in the Pacific War. As this longtime listeners or people who've read about it will understand this, but for those who don't, the high points you need to understand are this about the Pacific War, the Pacific portion of World War II, us versus the Empire of Japan. Early on, you know, December 7th, 1941, and then after that, for a long time, 1941, early 1942, for months and months and months and months and months, we were losing. We were getting pushed backwards. We had no wins. And for Americans alive today, there aren't very many of these old timers still left. So for Americans alive today, we don't even understand what that's like. Now, yes, we've had obviously some foreign engagements where we've had setbacks here, or we'll lose a battle there, or this guy will die here. Of course, we've had loss. I'm not acting like we don't have loss, but I'm talking about another nation pushing us around. America,
for the early part of World War II in the Pacific was pushed around. Japan, it was more than just Pearl Harbor. Japan took the Philippines away from us. Japan had naval superiority over the United States of America, had air superiority over the United States of America. Early World War II, early 1942, 1941 and 42, those were the years that belonged to Japan. Then Battle of Midway happened. We went into Guadalcanal and pushed them out of there. After that, it belonged to us. The entire rest of the war was us slowly but surely conquering island after island after island, really airstrip after airstrip after airstrip. Remember, it's always an airstrip war. Conquering airstrip after airstrip after airstrip on our way to Japan, where, as you know, we eventually dropped the bomb and we won. But that's the story of World War II in the Pacific, right? So by the time we get to Peleliu, part of the reason I've been reading Peleliu, let me just get it out of the way now. I've been reading a lot of Peleliu is because I find Peleliu to be, for a variety of different reasons, the most horrifying and heartbreaking of all the World War II Pacific battles. And I wasn't there, right? But I find it to be the worst. And there are a couple different reasons why. The first one is this. And we've been talking about this a lot lately when it comes to global war on terror stuff, GWAT veterans, how they're struggling right now. They're struggling because their country didn't try to win their wars, and their country used their sacrifice. And then we pull out of Afghanistan and just throw it all away. And it's hard for you, if you're one of those guys, I'll tell you, it's hard for me to accept that overall it wasn't necessary. Part of the reason Peleliu is so awful to me, uniquely awful, is it wasn't necessary. Look, we really had to take Guadalcanal. Iwo Jima, as horrible as Iwo Jima was, we kind of had to have it. There was a strategic purpose for it. Okinawa may be the worst of the Pacific War battles. It was not an option. You must have Okinawa if you're the United States of America. It's right there, just south of Japan. If you want to do a bombing campaign that's effective on the Empire of Japan, you must have Okinawa. By the time we invaded Peleliu, we didn't need it anymore. We could have taken all of our troops, all those Marines and Army, although this was kind of mainly one the Marines had to take on the chin, although they kind of did it to themselves. But anyway, it was the one we didn't have to do. And it's not as if that's me doing a 2020 in hindsight look at Peleliu. At the time, people were saying, high up admirals, generals were saying, I don't think we need to go to Peleliu. Even MacArthur, who you know I don't care for at all. I do not care for Doug MacArthur at all. Personal opinion, I do not like him. I never trust generals whose men dislike them, because that tells you everything you need to know. His men didn't like him, so I don't. But even MacArthur was saying, hey, why are you guys, hey, Marines, Nimitz, Chester Nimitz, the admiral, why are you doing this? Well, Nimitz, who is a great man and a great admiral and an American hero, he just had it in his mind that he was doing it. And momentum is a powerful thing. Now, we know that. Now let's talk about this. Again, this is the Jesse Kelly Show, and I swear it's political, but too bad, so sad. We're doing a bunch of Medal of Honor, World War II, probably some Vietnam history stuff tonight, because I feel like it. Anyway, another reason Peleliu seems so horrible is the environment itself sounds like a hellscape. And let me explain why. Peleliu is not really a jungle. We think of the World War II in the Pacific, and we mostly think about tropical, right? It's a jungle that we're fighting in the jungles. And for the most part, that was true. Not really necessarily so on Iwo Jima or the others. But Peleliu, it's just a big rock. It's just a big piece of coral. And when they were doing reconnaissance of Peleliu, they didn't really realize that because there is the thinnest layer in the world of dirt on top of a lot of that rock, the thinnest layer in the world, and then some shrubs. So from if you're on a plane looking down, you think, wow, it's another tropical island. It's not tropical. It's just coral rock. There's no water. It was 115 degrees and no water. The Marines who were on Peleliu, especially the first ones, all talk about how fast they ran out of water and how thirsty they were at all times. That's brutal. But mostly the reason Peleliu is so incredibly terrible is, well, the enemy learned. And we've talked about this before, and I'm going to get to my first citation, my old Medal of Honor citation here in a minute. But when we think about battles and talk about battles and wars, whether it be today, tomorrow, whatever, when we think about these things, we don't think about the enemy as being like us. And that's a very human thing to do. We want to dehumanize the enemy. Don't think you're a bad guy if you do that. It's very common. That's why you use racial or ethnic slurs against whoever your opponent is. This is not an American thing. This has been done in every single war battle in the history of mankind. Why are you doing that? You're trying to make them less than men in your mind. Makes it easier to kill them. So if you're fighting the Empire of Japan, you don't want to think about them like flesh and blood, human beings with values and minds and like you. You want to think about them like they're dogs, right? So you come up with, you know, Japs and Nips and all kinds of racial slurs you would use to do that for you in your mind, right? But the truth is they are thinking human beings just like you. And they learn just like you learn. And we had taken all these islands from them. And the Japanese finally figured out, look, we cannot stand up to American naval gunfire. It's just like someone dropping 500-pound bombs on you. You can't stand. We can't withstand naval gunfire. We cannot withstand American air superiority. By now, we had air superiority. We were dropping bombs on them from the sky. We're dropping artillery on them, naval gunfire. The Japanese, Peleliu was their real first, brand new, first experimentation with this concept. Instead of being on this island, let's be in it. Let's dig inside of it like rats and make them come get us. And that is going to bring us to our first Medal of Honor citation. There are a couple we are going to get to here before we do that. And honestly, they get better, I think, as we go along. I don't know. They're both incredible. Before we get to our first one, let's do this. Let's take care of our puppies. Did you know that probably I'd say a year after we got Fred, maybe 6 months to 6 months, maybe after we got Fred, the wife had let him get up on the bed, which she's not supposed to do. And he's up there and has a digestive problem. Fred used to have the weakest stomach in the world, and he would have digestive problems everywhere to the point we considered making him just an outside dog. It was that bad. Frantic. He doesn't have those anymore. Why? Rough greens. We give Fred rough greens with every meal. We pour rough greens on every dish he gets. Yes, dog food is dead food. We still give him his dog food. He loves it. Have the empty calories. But the nutrition he gets from rough greens includes probiotics, vitamins, minerals. It keeps Fred healthy, and it's going to keep him around for a long time. And keeps him from having problems in our bed. Go get a free Jumpstart trial bag for your dog. Free. Go to roughgreens.com/Jesse or call 833-33-MY-DOG.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're going to love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. It's already been a great Monday. We got all kinds of educated with BK, with the foreign policy stuff, ISIS, Russia. We got drug dealers running cities in the country. But now, you know, we're in Medal of Honor Monday time. And I just did a little bit of history behind Peleliu and the start of Peleliu and the World War II Pacific Battle. Of course, Peleliu is what I'm talking about. And I'm about to do our first Medal of Honor citation. I'm going to give you a little bit more detail on each citation
after I do each one. I think that's how I'm going to do these. That was the background of Peleliu. Now it's time for our first one. This is the Medal of Honor citation of a Mr. Arthur Jr. Jackson. And just know, honestly, the story after this one is probably even cooler than the citation itself.
Ready? Aim.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
This is for Arthur Jr. Jackson, USMC World War II Pacific. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving with the 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines, 1st Marine Division in action against enemy Japanese forces on the island of Peleliu in the Palau Group, 18th of September 1944. Boldly taking the initiative when his platoon's left flank advance was held up by the fire of Japanese troops concealed in strongly fortified positions, PFC Jackson unhesitatingly proceeded forward of our lines and courageously defied the heavy barrages, charged a large pillbox housing approximately 35 enemy soldiers, pouring his automatic fire into the opening of the fixed installation to trap the occupying troops. He hurled white phosphorus grenades and explosive charges brought up by a fellow Marine, demolishing the pillbox and killing all the enemy. Advancing alone under the continuous fire from other hostile emplacements, he employed similar means to smash two smaller positions in the immediate vicinity. Determined to crush the entire pocket of resistance, although harassed on all sides by the shattering blasts of Japanese weapons and covered only by small rifle parties, he stormed one gun position after another, dealing death and destruction to the savagely fighting enemy in his inexorable drive against the remaining defenses and succeeded in wiping out a total of 12 pillboxes and 50 Japanese soldiers. It was closer to 100, by the way. Stout-hearted and indomitable, despite the terrific odds, PFC Jackson resolutely maintained control of the platoon's left flank movement throughout his valiant one-man assault, and by his cool decision and relentless fighting spirit during a critical situation, contributed essentially to the complete annihilation of the enemy in the southern sector of the island. His gallant initiative and heroic conduct in the face of extreme peril reflect the highest credit upon PFC Jackson and the U.S. Naval Service. Now let me explain the rest of the story of Mr. Arthur Jr. Jackson. One thing you should know about Arthur Jr. Jackson is, and this is going to come into play here a little bit more in a moment, is he was enormous. I've heard he was 230 pounds. I've heard he was 210 pounds. Well, however big he was, everyone knew he was huge. He was not only huge. I need to clarify before I say the next thing. He lived to be an old man with his wife and was supposed to be, I've never met him, the kindest, most humble human being in the world. But you did not want to cross Arthur Jr. Jackson because not only was he huge, he was really good at violence. The Marine Corps, self-defense, beating people up, learning how to stab people stuff. Yeah, he was an expert at that. He excelled in virtually every field that involved shooting someone or beating somebody to death. That's what Arthur Jr. Jackson did. A born warrior and a monster. Huge, huge. So big that when he eventually got wounded, I forget which of the books I read this in this weekend, when he eventually got wounded, his stretcher bearers who had to haul him off of the island were cussing him out the whole way because he was so heavy trying to get him off the island. That's Arthur Jr. Jackson. Now, the pillbox story, it kind of tells itself. His unit was pinned down. They were being slaughtered by these guys. He didn't run the whole way like the Medal of Honor citation makes it sound. It's actually more impressive than that. He got into the prone. And remember, I just described Peleliu. It's all coral. It's all rock. Tears up your elbows, your knees just to get down on it, let alone it being hot. He essentially low crawled almost the entire way up to the pillbox. A white phosphorus grenade, not only does it create incredible heat if you're right by it. If you get hit with any of the white phosphorus, whatever it touches is going to burn immediately. It'll burn water. You could drop one in water and it'll burn right down to the bottom. Water would not put it out. But it creates an intense amount of smoke. This dude low crawls. If he did this once, it would be unreal. All the way up to a pillbox that's slaughtering his men. He's waiting the entire time on the way up to the pillbox. He's looking up at it. All they have to do is look down enough, and they're going to see him crawling up to it. He is not in cover. I need to stress, he is not in cover. He's in like this little depression, kind of a little path on the way up there. If they look over, he won't even, it'll be a machine gun burst in his head. It's over. He low crawls the entire way up and then just on his own figures out, hey, I've got an idea. I'm going to empty a mag into this thing. He was a BAR man. He carried a Browning automatic rifle. This. And that's going to come into play in just a moment. Actually, there's a really cool story about that. He was a BAR man. He unloads a mag, then drops a Willie Pete in there, a white phosphorus round in there. So the place is full of smoke. Now the Japanese in there, they can't see. They don't know what's going on. He then yanks a satchel charge. Dude hands him a satchel charge that came up with him. He drops it in there, but it's on a time fuse. He has to turn now and sprint away. But he has to sprint away. Remember, if they see him still, he's dead. They're right there in the pillbox. The satchel charge explodes and essentially fills his body with concrete fragments. He then goes and does it 11 more times to all the other pillboxes. Just him. Just by himself. All right. Now that's Jackson. Let me finish the Jackson story, and then we'll get to one more, and then maybe we'll do some more politics before I do other history. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
What I told people, I was making a podcast about Benghazi. 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yes, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, doing an extended history portion of Medal of Honor Monday today. I mean, why not? What are we going to do? We want to talk about that or don't?
Today I'm launching the National Resource Center for red flag laws.
I can't do it. We'll get back to her in a little while. We're too busy talking Peleliu. Now, let's finish the Arthur Jr. Jackson story. In case you just missed it, I just did the Medal of Honor citation for Arthur Jr. Jackson. I'm about to do another one. If you missed any of this stuff, just go download the podcast. It's free, too. iHeart, Google, Spotify, iTunes. Go enjoy. All right. Now, Arthur Jr. Jackson had another little part of his story. It didn't make it into the Medal of Honor citation because he didn't win one for this one. He's on Peleliu still. Remember how I told you he's a BAR man? Now, for you non-military types, that's a big, it's a machine gun, okay? It's a machine gun that shoots heavy rounds and shoots them fast. Look, this is honestly what it sounds like. This is the sound of a bar. That's what a bar sounds like. High caliber. Make a big old mess of you. You generally want big guys like Arthur Jr. Jackson carrying it because the weapon itself is heavy and so is the ammo. He's on Peleliu, and part of the reason Peleliu got so horrible was the Japanese. Remember how I was talking about how they learned and they dug in? Well, it was all just a big network of caves and spider holes that they had created for themselves. So these guys would pop up out of nowhere. Four Japanese guys pop up directly in front of Arthur Jr. Jackson, and he didn't even know they were there. Now, according to the stories, and I've read a few different things, and I listened to a podcast on it, he didn't think, or someone didn't think, they knew he was there either. They essentially surprised each other, but either way, he's alone, four Japanese troops in front of him. Jackson pulls out the BAR, unloads immediately on them. Three of them go down right away. Apparently, he just turned these guys into mincemeat with the BAR. But then, again, you get different versions of it depending on what you read. Either the mag was empty, or the weapon jammed, or something. But no more shooting. Now you've got three dead. There's a fourth guy there. Fourth dude attacks him. Jackson was not the man to attack. And this is a Japanese dude. He was not very big. Jackson, he said later on, he said that this is a physical encounter where he grabs the Japanese guy off of his back, chucks him on the ground, and beats him to death with his BAR. And Jackson, talking about it later, said, poor little guy didn't stand a chance. That is a stud right there. Arthur Jr. Jackson lived in, I believe it was Florida, for the rest of his days. That's a great man. All right, now that's one. Now this one's probably a little darker, but it's all dark. And that I realize that wasn't exactly light. We're talking about war and combat and things like that. But this one, look, he lives, but there's more to this story. So without further ado, let's do our second one today, and then I'll give you a little bit more background on it. A Mr. Everett Parker Pope.
Ready, aim.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving as commanding officer of Company C, 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, 1st Marine Division during action against enemy Japanese forces on Peleliu Island, Palau Group on the 19th of September through the 20th of September 1944. So in case you're keeping track, this is the day after Jackson earned his Medal of Honor. Subjected to point-blank cannon fire, which caused heavy casualties and badly disorganized his company while assaulting a steep coral hill, Captain Pope rallied his men and gallantly led them to the summit in the face of machine gun, mortar, and sniper fire. Forced by widespread hostile attack to deploy the remnants of his company thinly in order to hold the ground won, and with his machine guns out of order and insufficient water and ammunition, he remained on the exposed hill with 12 men, we'll get back to that in a minute, and one wounded officer, determined to hold through the night. attacked continuously with grenades, machine guns, and rifles from three sides. He and his valiant men fiercely beat back or destroyed the enemy, resorting to hand-to-hand combat as the supply of ammunition dwindled, and still maintaining his lines with his eight remaining riflemen when daylight brought more deadly fire and he was ordered to withdraw. His valiant leadership against devastating odds while protecting the units below from heavy Japanese attack reflects the highest credit upon Captain Pope in the U.S. Naval Service. And now let's dig into Peleliu a little bit more, because there is something about Peleliu you should understand. Again, I would encourage you to go read something on Peleliu. Books on tape are fine, Chris. Or, look, hey, go watch a documentary on it. I haven't looked. I bet you there's 1,000 on YouTube on there. I believe I've seen other ones floating around. Someone's always done a documentary. Go learn about Peleliu. Terrible, terrible thing. But when you start reading about it, learning about it, you will undoubtedly hear Bloody Nose Ridge. You will hear that term, Bloody Nose Ridge. And this is going to come back to Pope and what his men did and just stories you just can't imagine, stories you've never heard of before. But Bloody Nose Ridge, I know you're going to find this shocking, was a ridge of coral. Again, all hardened coral. And it was a ridge, the Japanese, that's where they had made their caves and made their tunnels. It was their fortress. And you couldn't blow them out of there with naval gunfire, with artillery. You have to go get them out. Now, what was happening here with Parker Pope and his 1st Marine Division, allow me to explain. The 1st Marine Division going into Peleliu, many people say, and obviously I'm very partial to the Marines, so I don't know whether or not this is true, but I certainly nodded my head and say, oh yeah, that's definitely true. Many people say this was the finest fighting division on the planet at this time. We're talking Germans, Russian, Japanese, Americans. You want one infantry division to go fight for you, it would be the 1st Marine Division because of the things they had done. Another reason Peleliu was so horrible is the 1st Marine Division got destroyed. The Marines, and look, they have to own it. The Marines, the commanders, Nimitz has to own it too. They took the finest division on the planet and they completely decimated it because they threw it against these defenses that could not be broken in that way. Now, with Pope and his men, the reason we kept citing how many men he had is you have to understand this. Again, there's the ridge there. You understand this about combat. It doesn't matter whether you're a 12-year-old listening to my show or 97. Everyone understands this about combat. You have to have the high ground. You want the high ground. You want to be able to shoot down, throw down. You don't want to attack up ever. You want to attack down. That is a basic thing. Everyone knows that. You don't need to go to West Point to know high ground. Well, Bloody Nose Ridge was not only the place with all the Japanese caves and tunnels and fortifications, it was the high ground. So no matter what, you had to take it. And even getting up to the ridge, Pope and his men, Charlie Company, I'm just going to call him Charlie Company because that's what it was called when I was in the Marine Corps, Charlie Company. Pope is the commanding officer. They are given orders. They have to get up and establish a foothold on this hill. They're at the base of it. They believe it's a hilltop. He needs the Marine Corps, the 1st Marine Division, the America. They need Pope and his men to get to the top of this hill and hold this hill. Except there's a problem. The Japanese understand that people are going to be taking this hill. And it's not a grassy hill. It's a cliff. One you have to climb as if it's a cliff. And believe me, I'm just starting on the story of Pope and Charlie Company and heroes and things people have gone through to protect this country. Because I feel like, and I don't want to talk about politics right now. I'll get to that next hour. I will continue that in just a moment. Before we continue that, let's talk about this. Let's talk about our own ways we are trying to save the country. Our very, very small ways compared to men like this, right? But one of the reasons I do love Pure Talk so much is their CEO is a veteran. Why do you think Pure Talk, why do you think their mission is veteran suicide? While all the other cell phone companies are giving to Black Lives Matter and Planned Parenthood, Pure Talk's trying to save our guys who are hurting right now. I love that, man. I love it. He's so patriotic, he only hires Americans. Customer service is based in America. You get a hold of Pure Talk, you're speaking to an American. And your bill goes down, not up. Same 5G network, switch your cell phone service to Pure Talk. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. They're giving out free smartphones right now, Samsung 5Gs. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, completely driving the show off the rails and doing an extended Medal of Honor Monday, history story Monday. So I'm not catching you up on everything. You're going to have to go download a podcast to get caught up. We're in the middle of Peleliu. Everett Parker Pope, company commander, Charlie Company. He's been told, he said, they're trying to get up on top of this hill. And he's been told, get your men up on top of the hill. And so the men of Charlie Company begin to climb. They're rock climbing up. The Japanese are not only on top, they're also built into the sides of the hill. When I say built in, meaning if there's enough room for one of these guys to wedge himself onto the hill, he will simply hide there with a box of grenades and a gun and drop grenades on the Marines as they're coming up. There's a famous story. In fact, there are multiple stories like this, and this isn't the last time you're going to hear this, of a Marine tripping on one on the way up. He didn't even know he was there. He looks down, and it's a Japanese soldier. And I guess he was a bigger Marine. We don't know his name to this day. He reaches down and snatches him up and just chucks him off the cliff. And all the guys down below are cheering, yeah, look at him fly. This is the story of Peleliu. I'm telling you, this is why I go crazy when I hear about Hollywood not having any ideas. Hollywood, call me. Are you kidding me? Not any ideas? You can make an entire movie about just this part of Peleliu. So Pope's men are climbing and they're dying. I want you to know, fast forward to the end of this, I told you about the 1st Marine Division. I want you to know by the time Peleliu's done, 3/4 of them gone. Casualties. The wiped out. And Pope's company is being wiped out. By the time his men get to the top, well, you heard, it's 12 men, it's 13, it's 14. The numbers kind of go back and forth. But he gets to the top of this, quote, hill he's supposed to take. And the reason I use the words, the reason I did the quote thing there is Hill and his men discover once they get to the top of the hill that they're actually not on a hill at all. They're on the tip of the ridge. The ridge the Japanese have complete control of. So after getting to the top, his completely decimated unit is now facing the entirety of the Japanese army built into Peleliu, and he's not allowed to leave, and he can't dig in. Back to what we were talking about, it's coral. You can't dig in it. They can't sit and blast out holes. They don't even have communication with headquarters anymore. He's lost that. Now, I want you to imagine this, speaking of Hollywood. What I'm about to describe is real. It happened. Pope and his men, they got into whatever depressions they could find. There weren't many of them, as you heard. They couldn't really dig in well, but they got in where they could. And they understood that the Japanese were going to counterattack to run them off that hill. And they understood that the Japanese love to attack at night. They knew this well by now. They would attack with bayonets, with samurai swords. They're going to come for you in the night. They are. And they're going to sneak in, and they're happy to die doing it. And so Pope and his men lay out on this hill, and they all believe they're about to die. And they set all of their, they were clips because it was M1 Grand, but they set out all their ammo, all their grenades, and they didn't have many left. They collected rocks to throw, and they watched as the sun began to go down, and they knew it was coming. And as they were laying there, they were hearing enough in front of them that they believed that they had some people getting ready to get on top of them. They get some naval flares overhead. Flares get launched overhead. Tell me this isn't out of the movies.
And as soon as the flares light up in front of them, they see a sea of Japanese bodies low crawling towards their position. And then it's on. All night long, hand-to-hand combat, grenades. By now, you learn that you didn't shoot when you heard someone in front of you because that gives away your position. You threw grenades. You threw rocks. Pope himself, with a fellow Marine, had a couple Japanese guys drop into whatever makeshift fighting hole he had. Hand-to-hand combat ensued. They overcame them and won. And this took place the entire night. Once they defeated the two Japanese troops who dropped into their hole, there wasn't room for everyone up there. Again, they were on a cliff. They just kept grabbing the dead Japanese and chucking them off the end of the cliff after they killed them in the middle of the night. An entire night hand fighting with Japanese troops. That is Pope. That is what people have gone through for your country and my country. They barely survived, had no ammunition. They were well aware by now of what the Japanese troops would do if they were taken alive. Pope had a pistol on him as well as his rifle. Pope was down to the last round in his pistol and said, "I could have fired it many times, but that last one in the chamber was for me. If they finally got to me." They barely got off the top of that ridge alive. And from there, I mean, the 1st Marine Division, for lack of a better way to put it, was no more. They had to go essentially retire to the rear and took so much time to rebuild them into a fighting force. And we didn't even have to be there. And Peleliu is such a horrible, horrible place. If you're not a reader or you don't want to do an audiobook or whatnot, and more, maybe you're just more of a, hey, I like to watch TV type person. It's been a while since I've seen it, but you know that HBO series It's just called The Pacific. It's a, quote, fiction series with actors, but it is actually made based off, in large part, Eugene Sledge, E.B. Sledge's book. He wrote a book called With the Old Breed, and Peleliu was the first action he saw in Peleliu. So if you watch The Pacific, it's an extremely realistic reenactment of the various things Eugene Sledge and his men went through on Peleliu. If you want to understand what the environment was like and the rocks and the hills and the crags, and if you want to understand how and why that place just absolutely shattered men, it broke men, you could watch The Pacific. I should note, sorry, a little dad note here, not for the kids, not for little kids for sure. The Pacific, it's been a while, but I know, look, it's salty and raw. It's Marines. The language is bad. The violence is bad. There may even be some little Kamala stuff in there. I don't know, but maybe, probably not for the kids, but something worth watching. All right. We're going to talk about other things. There's a headline out here about the great divorce. We'll get to that. But first, we're going to talk about controlling the message. Communism. Why is NBC mad about Ronna McDaniel and employment? Next.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fia is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.